Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
While she remained in the workplace, there was no safe, impartial place or person, and there were no procedures in place.
A former Kenai Peninsula Borough employee accuses former Mayor Charlie Pierce of sexual harassment. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, October 24th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, AFN hosts a forum for U.S. House and Senate candidates.
We are in Mary's house, and I know that. Love her dearly, I'm as proud of her as all of you are.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience, your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
A former Kenai Peninsula Borough employee says she faced constant sexual harassment from former borough mayor and current gubernatorial candidate Charlie Pierce while she was his assistant. She's now suing Pierce and the borough, and her 20-page lawsuit details an alleged pattern of harassment by Pierce that she says the borough did nothing to stop. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
In a lawsuit filed Friday in State Superior Court, Kenai resident Pamela Wastell says she endured a hostile work environment and constant sexual harassment for the year and a half she was Pierce's executive assistant at the Kenai Peninsula Borough. Wastell started working at the borough in 2013. Pierce, a Republican, was elected as borough mayor in 2017 and resigned in August, saying he needed to focus on his campaign for governor. The lawsuit, as first reported by the Anchorage Daily News, says Pierce would touch and kiss Wastell against her will and that he made sexual remarks, using his authority to intimidate her behind closed doors in his Soldotna office. The lawsuit also alleges the borough failed to protect Wastell and several other employees from Pierce's harassment. It does not name a dollar amount she's seeking in damages. Caitlin Shortell is Wastell's Anchorage-based attorney. She says her client was afraid to report the behavior to the borough before this summer for fear of retaliation.
Knowing that while she remained in the workplace, there was no safe, impartial place or person, and there were no procedures in place.
Wastell first reported Pierce's inappropriate behavior to the borough's legal department in July, according to the lawsuit. And in the days following, she was placed on paid administrative leave. The borough hired an outside firm to conduct an independent investigation into the allegations, which it later concluded were credible. Pierce resigned in late August and left the borough in September. The lawsuit claims Wastell wasn't the only victim of Pierce's harassment. The suit points to a handful of other alleged instances of sexual harassment and discrimination by Pierce, including 2 settlements totaling nearly $270,000 from 2 former human resources directors. It also alleges 2 new instances of sexual harassment against 2 female borough employees. Shortell says the borough failed those employees because it did not have a clear and safe reporting mechanism.
And what that meant is that there were victims who weren't protected, and Ms. Wastell was one of those victims.
Borough policy says employees making complaints should bring them to the attention of their supervisor, the head of their department, or their human resources director. The matter should then be referred to the human resources director or, if the complaint is against the director, to the borough attorney. The acting human resources director at the time of Wastell's complaint was Pierce's chief of staff, Aaron Rhodes. He left the borough at the end of September, following Pierce's resignation. An attorney representing Pierce declined to comment on the case, and borough attorney Sean Kelly said he'd not yet been served the suit and therefore would not comment either. The lawsuit says the borough asked Wastell to come back to work or that it might terminate her employment. Shortell says Wastell has not returned to work there because the borough hasn't put into place procedures to protect her from harassment or retaliation, and because she suffered emotional distress. Meanwhile, Pierce continues his run to be Alaska governor. He received 6.7% in the August primary election, making the cut as the fourth candidate in the November 8th ranked choice general election. Current Governor Mike Dunleavy has encouraged his supporters to rank Pierce second on their ballots. A spokesperson for Dunleavy's campaign did not respond to an email Monday asking whether he would still suggest ranking Pierce second. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
In an emailed response late today to questions about whether he still supported ranking Pierce second, a spokesperson for Governor Dunleavy said, quote, "It would be unfair to make any snap judgments or draw any conclusions from a complaint filed just days ago," end quote. Alaska top U.S. Senate candidates found one point of agreement Saturday, the need to protect Arctic Alaska from foreign aggression. At the Alaska Federation of Natives Candidate Forum in Anchorage, Senator Lisa Murkowski said Russian President Vladimir Putin won't limit his bad behavior to Europe.
He's got one hand on Ukraine and he's got the other on the Arctic.
Murkowski said she'd spoken to the two asylum seekers who fled eastern Russia by boat and landed on Alaska's St. Lawrence Island early this month. She revealed that they are indigenous Siberians who were afraid they'd be drafted to fight in Ukraine.
It is very clear to me that these individuals were in fear, so much in fear of their own government, that they risked their lives and took a 15-foot skiff across those open waters. That says a lot.
As for countering the threat, Murkowski recited a long list of items she helped add to federal spending bills, like new icebreakers, an Arctic Security Center, and work on a bigger port for Nome. Her Republican rival, Kelly Chewbacca, spoke about the threat from both Russia and China. She's an attorney who has worked in the Inspector General offices of several agencies and in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence.
So with that background, I'm the only candidate up here who has the subject matter experience and the relationships in the national security community to successfully advocate for an expanded defense in order to strengthen our readiness and preparedness in the Arctic.
The U.S. Senate race is mostly between the two Republicans. Chewbacca is endorsed by the Alaska Republican Party and former President Donald Trump. Murkowski is one of Trump's biggest targets, but a committee associated with Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is backing Murkowski and funding attack ads Chewbacca objects to.
That is fundamentally un-American. It is an absolute desecration of democracy.
Later Saturday, AFN delegates approved a resolution endorsing Murkowski's re-election. And there was no doubt who the crowd favorite was at the Alaska Federation of Natives Candidate Forum for U.S. House Saturday. Attendees cheered and waved photos of Mary Peltola, the first Alaska Native person to serve in Congress. Former Governor Sarah Palin said this is the toughest campaign she's ever fought.
Because of her, Mary is and we are in Mary's house, and I know that. Love her dearly. I'm as proud of her as all of you are.
Palin says she thinks Peltola is doing a good job filling the remainder of the late Congressman Don Young's term. But Peltola is a Democrat, Palin is a Republican, and Palin says Alaska needs to help Republicans win back control of the House. Still, Palin didn't show the same warmth for the other Republican on stage with her, Nick Begich. Begich said one of his top goals is to make the business case for Alaska. On a question about disparities in mental health, Begich saw an economic angle.
We have to make sure that we have job opportunities and long-term community development plans in order for people to know, youth specifically, that they have a career and a purpose.
Palin also made the link between jobs and mental health.
God created us to work.
Peltola cited a lot of factors that she says support mental health, housing, education, nutrition, and telehealth care included. She mentioned a treatment program in the Yukon-Kuskokwim region that gets people outdoors.
And this isn't just for Alaska Natives. This is for everybody. Anybody from around the nation can access this kind of treatment. And what better treatment is there than being in the outdoors and connecting with our wildlife and sharing with our elders?
The forum ended on a lighter note with questions about, among other things, a favorite traditional food made of berries and whipped fat or vegetable shortening.
Have you had a gudeg this week?
It wasn't anybody's birthday, so not this week, no.
I've actually had it three times.
That was Palin followed by Peltola. Begich said that he'd had none that week, and Libertarian Chris Bayh joked that Peltola ate his portion. AFN delegates later officially endorsed Peltola in the U.S. House race. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a North Pole woman's dog was attacked by an unexpected predator.
And out of nowhere, bam! Here's this big old huge fish, which I didn't know what it was.
That fish is coming up. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Bristol Bay Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will discuss Deferred Wildlife Proposal WP22-40, allowing use of snow machines to position wolves and wolverines for harvest on federal public lands, and other subsistence-related issues at a public meeting November 2nd and 3rd in Dillingham. More at 800-478-1456 or doi.gov/subsistence/regions. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Ketchikan's borough has taken an early step towards addressing the increasing number of short-term rental properties as the community faces an ongoing housing shortage. Last week, the Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly took the first of two votes on a measure to require owners of vacation rental properties to register for a free permit. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, it's a step aimed at figuring out just how many properties are listed on services like Airbnb and Vrbo.
Ketchikan Planning Director Richard Harney says vacation rentals have upsides and downsides.
Vacation rentals appear to have a negative impact on the affordability of homes and tourism destinations. This has been seen across the nation and talked about and reported on multiple times. That being said, vacation rentals do serve a very, very important piece of a tourism destination's economy and should not be just excluded.
So before the borough considers any potential limits on short-term rentals, Harney said it's a good idea to figure out just how many are out there.
We have different reports that have been run, and they show different numbers, ranging from less than 100 to over 300. This code amendment will allow us to identify how many there are.
Harney said the permit won't require a fee or have any other special requirements. Pretty simple. Name, address, property location, signature.
It'll just be a paperwork, so that way we can make sure that they get their zoning permits, and then also so we can get it over to finance, so that way they can be registered for sales tax and the transient occupancy tax.
Assemblymember Jamie Palmer said keeping track of the number of available Airbnbs could also make Ketchikan a more attractive destination for business conventions.
I was just at the Alaska Travel Industry Association conference, and one of the reasons why they haven't been here in a long time is because they say we don't have enough beds. But I would challenge that, and I hope that this ordinance moving forward would allow us to bring larger scale conferences like that down here.
But Assemblymember Glenn Thompson took issue with a provision that would have required owners to re-register their properties each year.
It's going to tell the people, A, we don't trust you, and B, you need to come and kiss the ring every year. And I don't think that sends the right message to our business community, especially when we're trying to increase the amount of independent travelers.
Harney said requiring annual registration would help officials keep track of how the vacation rental market changes over time. Assemblymember Jeremy Bynum, who's also running for the House District 1 seat in the November election, said the borough could keep track of filings on quarterly sales tax reports instead. He simply tied on a vote to remove the requirement for an annual renewal, with Thompson, Bynum, and Jamie Palmer voting in favor. Mayor Rodney Dial voted to nix the requirement, breaking the tie. The Assembly voted down another amendment from Thompson that would have allowed vacation rentals in industrial zones. Harney said that would allow residents to bypass a prohibition on housing in industrial zones.
This would definitely open up a loophole.
The final vote on the measure to require property owners to register short-term rental properties with the borough was 5-1, with Bynum opposed. He said he was concerned the system wouldn't allow homeowners to live in properties designated as vacation rentals. Others suggested the issue could be fixed when the measure comes back for a final vote on November 7th. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
The Alaska Federation of Natives wants federal officials to recognize that a lack of veterinary care in Native communities is a public health issue. AFN convention delegates on Saturday adopted a resolution that calls on federal authorities to make a declaration that could lead to veterinary services through the Indian Health Service. The resolution describes the lack of veterinary care as an ongoing public health crisis that is severely impacting residents' quality of life. Segalik Elizabeth Hensley of Kotzebue spoke briefly about one of the primary concerns.
We really do support this resolution and view veterinarian services as essential, especially with the rabies problem that we see.
The resolution says Alaska Native children have the highest hospitalization rates from dog bites in the IHS system. Donald Charlie is from Nenana in Interior, Alaska. He's a former musher and former chief of the Nenana Native Village Council, and he initially brought forward the resolution idea. He says that when basic services like neutering and vaccinations are accessible, that helps control stray populations, disease, and potential harm to people.
Almost everybody owns dogs, whether they're pet dogs or working dogs or race dogs or whatever.
The resolution is specifically addressed to Congress and the Department of Health and Human Services. For two long years, there was no dedicated shelter for young people in Juneau who needed a safe place to sleep. But last July, Shiyi Hothead, or Spruce Root House, opened. It was designed with input from youth who had direct experience with homelessness. It's been open for a little over a year now and has served dozens of Juneau's youth. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry has the story.
Welcome to Shiyi Hothead facility.
Before the youth shelter opened, Tiana struggled to find a safe place to stay.
This is our lobby. It's aesthetically pleasing, I think, personally.
KTOO isn't using her last name due to the stigma attached to homelessness. She's 19 now and has her own apartment, but she says that the support that she got from adults at Shiyi Hothead saved her life.
I know there's a lot of kids out there who grew up or is growing up right now that don't have a safe place to go and don't have people to turn to. And that was me. And these people are the people that I learned how to turn to. So being involved in this has changed my life for the better.
Jordan Nigro is the youth services manager for the city of Juneau, and she runs the Shiyi Hothead Youth Shelter. In the 15 months since the shelter opened, Nigro says dozens of individuals have been helped. If you multiply the number of individuals by the number of nights spent at Shiyi Hothead, it's around 1,600.
I've known kids who have traded, you know, sexual favors for places to stay, who have, you know, been exposed to things that they really should not have been exposed to in order to have a place to stay. There's some real sad stuff that will happen when there aren't places like this for kids to go.
The kids use the shelter for a few different reasons.
For the most part, our youth who are coming into the shelter have either run away from home or threatened to run away from home, or they are living at home in an unsafe situation, and they come in because of abuse or neglect.
The average time spent per youth at the shelter is about 13 days. And so far, more than 90% of the youth who've used the shelter have gone on to a safe and stable place.
And we do these exit surveys when kids leave and ask them, you know, a bunch of questions. But one of the things is like, would you recommend this to a friend? And 100% of the youth have said yes.
People like Tiana were a big help in setting up the shelter for success. As part of the city's Youth Action Board, she's able to give input based on her experiences. One thing that was important to her when designing the youth shelter was that each person should have their own room.
Maybe if I was in this situation, which I was, I wouldn't want to do that with somebody else. I would want to have the privacy of being able to be alone and sit in my room.
Another project she pushed for on the Youth Action Board was a place for young people aged 18 to 20. So the shelter hosts transitional housing, a four-room apartment available, which is currently rent-free. 11 young adults have used the apartment since the shelter opened. And usually people stay there for about 2 or 3 months, according to shelter leadership. Shiyi Hothead Youth Shelter is more than a place to stay for just a while.
People want to eat on the couch. Don't know if that's allowed, but they're more than welcome to, right?
Eat on the couch?
Yeah. I eat on the couch.
We try to eat at the table.
We try to eat at the table.
So we can have nice discussions.
So we can have beautiful discussions at the table.
Nigro said the staff work to foster community with youth by cooking and eating together, encouraging normal daily routines, and having downtime when youth can watch TV and play games together. Nigro said that about half of the youth at Sheyi Hat Hit are LGBTQ+ identifying, and a quarter of them are transgender. This is consistent with national trends. Over a quarter of LGBT+ youth experience housing insecurity or homelessness, but having at least one supportive adult in their life decreases their chance of attempting suicide by 40%. That's according to the Trevor Project, a national suicide prevention organization for LGBTQ+ young people. Nigro says she wants more people to know about Sheyi Hat Hit, so any youth who find themselves in an unstable housing situation know where they can go. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you are experiencing domestic violence or feel unsafe, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is here for you. Call 1-844-762-8483 or visit strongheartshelpline.org. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience. Your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Voting for this year's midterm elections started today at city halls, community centers, churches, and election offices all over Alaska. Voters will rank their favorite candidates for governor, U.S. House and Senate, and state House and Senate. They'll also vote in a once-a-decade question about whether to hold a constitutional convention, plus whether judges on state courts should continue to hold their jobs. Registered voters must bring some form of identification to the polls. That can be a driver's license, state ID card, passport, birth certificate, military ID, or a hunting or fishing license. Alternatively, voters can provide a utility bill, bank statement, paycheck, or a government document with their name and current address. Any Alaskan can also vote by mail. Voters can apply for a mail-in ballot at absenteeballotapplication.alaska.gov through Saturday. Absentee ballots must be postmarked by November 8th. Last day to vote is Election Day, that's November 8th. Polls all over the state will be open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Employers are also required by law to give employees time off to vote. Early voting locations are listed online at elections.alaska.gov. The town of Thorne Bay has rallied to bring their new library to life. It officially opened this summer and now has one full-time employee and more than a dozen regular volunteers. KRBD's Reagan Miller spoke with the library's new director about how it's going so far.
The Thorne Bay Library opened its doors in a new building earlier this summer. Now, 4 months later, it's a peaceful spot, decked out with Halloween decorations like paper pumpkin garlands in the cozy children's room and fake paper slime taped to the stacks. There are four public computers, an Alaskana literature room, shelves of movies, a space to sit and read, and a covered porch. And Caitlin Sawyer, the library's director, is the only full-time employee.
And right now for me, for my vision, it's making events and programs happen.
This month brings a murder mystery-themed scavenger hunt, a short story night, and preschool story times. Sawyer says events like these help kids and parents beat boredom as fall and winter take hold on the town of 300.
There's not really anyone who puts on events or programs. I mean, we have a school, we have a store, and we have a gas station. So the library is really a good place for the community to meet and do things.
And Sawyer says she knows that the library is a safe haven for the town's youngest residents.
I see a lot of kids just wandering, keeping them engaged and learning new things or experiencing new things, especially in a small town, I think is important.
Sawyer's been surprised at how steady visitors to the library have been since she's took on the job. And the most popular items in the library collection?
Movies, definitely movies.
Internet and streaming services are often unreliable in Thorne Bay, especially for residents on the south side of the town.
The internet, it's getting better with the addition of Starlink, but you can't really stream anything unless you pay for better internet.
The library is unique. It was shipped to Thorne Bay via barge in pieces. Locals work together to put the final touches on construction. It's got a squad of more than a dozen volunteers who watch the desk while Sawyer is away. and it was completely paid for by grants and the community.
I think a lot of people who don't volunteer now really gave a lot for the library to be what it is now. And so we need to use that to show that we appreciate it.
The library is open Monday through Saturday. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
A North Pole woman is keeping her dogs away from a neighborhood gravel pit after a northern pike attacked one of them there that last month. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Longtime North Pole resident Shannon Daunt says it was a warm September day when she stopped to let her two dogs cool off at the neighborhood gravel pit.
This is over off of Copper Street, off Dennis Road in North Pole. Never had anything, any instance of trouble, or it's been our popular little spot for years, but not anymore.
Daunt says her Chihuahua, Mulan, luckily wanted nothing to do with the water, but her husky greyhound mix, Murphy, went down to the edge.
And out of nowhere, bam, here's this big old huge fish, which I didn't know what it was. I have found out since that it's a northern pike. But the thing was probably, which I've heard now, is a small one, 3 feet, hanging off his muzzle, you know. And he starts shaking his head, and this thing is holding on.
Daunt says Murphy pushed the toothed fish off with a paw, but then the pike bit his leg.
Long enough to get, you know, some really good teeth in there.
Daunt says Murphy was able to get free, and the fish flopped back into the water. She says she got Murphy home, where he proceeded to bleed heavily.
He just bled everywhere.
Daunt has photos of her home that look like something from a slasher movie. She says Murphy wouldn't let her help, but the wounds, although numerous, were small and shallow, and Murphy licked them until the bleeding stopped. He's fully recovered from the attack, and Daunt says she's since spent some time researching northern pike.
Looked at them online, and number one, they're gnarly, and number two, they get huge.
Pike are pretty prehistoric fish. You know, they don't really have brains. They're programmed to eat, right?
State fisheries biologist Klaus Wuttig says he's never heard of a pike biting a dog.
It is surprising, but it's not surprising, because pike are pretty renowned for hitting baby ducks, bulls on the surface. And so the dog snout, could that activate a pike to strike? Surely, you know, pike are lion weight predators, right? Just like an alligator. So the dog was just the wrong place at the wrong time, you know.
Wuttig says he's been bitten by a pike a few times, and it's important to pry their jaws open rather than try to pull away, as the fish have hundreds of tiny teeth that can result in a lot of cuts. Daunt has a video a friend shot of a pike, possibly the same one that bit her dog Murphy, going after a beaver in the gravel pit. She says nobody's been able to catch the fish. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Eric Stone and Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, Liz Ruskin and Jeremy Shea in Anchorage, Sabine Pooks in Kenai, Yvonne Crumry in Juneau, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby. Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Westmark Fairbanks Hotel and Conference Center, offering guests hot breakfast, Wi-Fi, and the Red Lantern Steak and Spirits Restaurant. Reservations at westmarkhotels.com.
And by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil exploration and production and working to create economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.